Joe Walsh, former Congressman Joe Walsh, back with you. Thank you for listening. Follow me on Twitter at Walsh Freedom. The New York Times, again, has been in the news recently. An anti-Semitic cartoon that they put out in their international version a few days ago. I wanted to discuss this with somebody who knows the history of the New York Times when it comes to reporting on Israel. He is Gilad Ini, a senior research analyst with CAMRA, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America. Gilad, thank you for joining me. I think a lot of our listeners might have been taken aback by the cartoon of a few days ago, but the New York Times has a history here, don't they?
Sure, they have quite a long history. In fact, it goes back to at least the 30s and 40s and continues up until this cartoon the other day, which I think we need to note that it was part of a progression. It didn't come out of the blue as you recognize. So the history, I mean, if we look way back in time, we know that the New York Times actually buried something as egregious as the Holocaust itself back in the 30s and 40s. That shocked some people, but it's true, and I would recommend they check out a book called Buried by the Times by a journalism professor named Laurel Leff. So they even downplayed anti-Semitism by Hitler and relegated the genocide news to the back pages of the newspaper.
And Gilad, where does that, back then, where did that come from? Where did that anti-Israel, anti-Semitism notion come from?
That's a really interesting question, because it underscores that even if it's not the result of explicit anti-Semitism by the publishers at the time, the publishers, the Sulzbergers, it was in effect obviously anti-Semitic to downplay genocide. But in this case, the reason that people, the analysts of the publishers, believe they took this course of not really seriously covering the Holocaust was because the newspaper was really eager to present itself as not being a Jewish related paper, right? This is a paper in New York, right, and the family of publishers had been of Jewish ancestry. They converted, but the publishers were very eager to show that they don't take don't take Jewish concerns very seriously, so that they aren't seen as Jews. And what happens was they take Jewish issues unseriously, and that's to the detriment of everyone, of course.
So Gilad, when you saw the cartoon of a few days ago, what was your reaction? Clearly you weren't surprised. You know there's a history here, but still, when you saw that cartoon just a few days ago, what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think the most surprising thing about this cartoon was that it didn't come particularly as a surprise. First of all, there's no question, of course, that the cartoon itself was anti-Semitic. The newspaper recognizes it, the Jewish community recognizes it, the broader community recognizes it, and the cartoon speaks for itself, right? It's that old trope, that very old, dangerous trope of Jews controlling the world, manipulating, blinding, hypnotizing world leaders. And so...
And by the way, Gilad, on the point you brought up a moment ago, do you believe that the New York Times sufficiently recognizes that it was anti-Semitic?
Yeah, I think after the backlash, after the publication of the cartoon, the key is that they recognized it after the fact, and that's enough.
Okay.
They heard the backlash. They heard our voices, criticizing the paper, and they apologized. They actually apologized for the publication, but they then went on to pin blame on just one mid-level editor. They insisted that there was one person who saw and selected the cartoon and placed it in the print edition of the paper. No one else had oversight over it. And, you know, I think that claim, I've heard questions about that claim from more than one opinion editor. But even if it's true, it's a cop-out. This is a much broader problem than one particular editor.
So you're, Gilad, and again, I'm very skeptical as well. You're not buying that explanation, are you?
I'm not buying the explanation. To me, it strikes me as a public relations yeah. comment, a excuse that was drawn up by the public relations department, yeah. nor am I buying that they quietly dropped their relationship with the syndicate that provided the cartoon to right. the newspaper, as if it's the syndicate's fault and not the editor's fault. So I'm not buying that as a credible response by the newspaper either. The newspaper has a big problem, and it's a problem that begins with their institutional anti-Israelism, yeah. this dogma that, in practice at least, is certainly intertwined with anti-Semitism yes. and is codependent, I think, with anti-Semitism, if not even a disguise for it. So the newspaper has to address the core of the problem, not the editor or the syndicator of the cartoon.
Hey, Joe Walsh, don't go anywhere. More coming up with Gilad Inu.
It's your daily act of civil disobedience. This is the Joe Walsh Program on the Salem Radio Network.
Hey, Joe Walsh, we're back with Gilad Inu of CAMRA, CAMRA.org, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America. Gilad, you're correct in that the reaction from people, not just Jewish Americans, but a lot of people, was pretty strong and pretty fierce condemning this cartoon. What do you hope and expect now to see moving forward from the New York Times?
That's a good question. And a couple of things. First, it's important to remember why we're condemning the cartoon, because this anti-Semitism isn't just a violation of ethical journalism, which it obviously mm-hmm. is, but mm-hmm. it's also dangerous. I mean, the gunman who murdered 11 Jews at a Pittsburgh synagogue last year had previously, before his attack, shared an image on social media with that same scene suggesting that a Jew controls the American president, the very yep. same thing that yep. appeared in the New York Times cartoon. And, of course, just two days after the cartoon was published, another white nationalist anti-Israel yep. gunman attacked yep. that California synagogue and killed yep. a Jewish woman. So this is really an important thing for the newspaper to get a grip on. They need to take steps to regain the public's trust and show that they've really learned lessons from the publication of the cartoon, which means addressing this atmosphere at the newspaper that yes. leads them to fail to see really straightforward examples of anti-Semitism, not only to fail to see it, but to publish it. So I think what we need to see from the paper is a renewed commitment to their codes of ethics. And that doesn't yep. mean making promises about reporting without fear or favor, like they often do. The promises aren't enough at this point. What we need to see first about this publication is transparency, right?
Yes.
The public deserves openness about the newspaper promised significant changes in the wake of this publication, and we deserve openness about what those changes are going to be, yeah. what disciplinary yeah. action is taken, how are editors going to be trained to recognize anti-Semitism and bigotry. Will the paper adopt a definition of anti-Semitism by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance? Will they change staffing? Will they make sure more than one editor sees things so that they can't use that excuse again? They need to renew their commitment to impartiality as well. The newspaper's habit of favoring Israel's opponents is glaring. In recent months,
yes.
they've minimized broad criticism of anti-Semitism by members of Congress who, in the pages of the newspaper, condemnation by five top Democratic leaders, none of them Jewish, turned into condemnation of Ilhan Omar's anti-Semitic yeah. comments,
yeah.
turned into, in the paper, a mere Republican ploy, or in another article, it was just some Jewish Democrats who were supposedly behind the condemnation, although none of these five House leadership positions are filled by Jews. So that's just untrue. So we need the newspaper to stop that lack of impartiality because journalists who don't take anti-Semitism seriously when it comes from opponents of Israel don't take anti-Semitism seriously, period. So for them to recognize anti-Semitism, they have to recognize all types of anti-Semitism, including from politicians that the newspaper favors and including yeah. in conversations about Israel.
The voice you hear there belongs to Gilad Inu. He's with CAMRA. He's a senior research analyst with CAMRA, the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, a fantastic organization. that fights against exactly what we're speaking about here, fights for objective reporting in the Middle East. Check them out, camera.org. Gilad, to that point, though, I'm just so curious about this. I mean, you and I know that the New York Times over the years and now has always clearly had an anti-Israel bias. Is what you're trying to do twofold? Make sure that anti-Israel bias doesn't creep into anti-Semitism, but also, is there something that can be done about that, their basic anti-Israel bias?
Look, they're both important, and the anti-Israel bias stands on its own, even without the anti-Semitism. The Americans need a impartial press to be able to make informed decisions, and that means a press without bias, regardless of whether they're covering Israel, the Arabs, Democrats, or Republicans. We need an impartial press, and we don't have one. That's why Camera put a giant billboard in Times Square facing into the New York Times building, because it's that urgent. And secondly, the bias itself can lead to even larger problems, like the problem of anti-Semitism. A New York Times columnist, Brett Stevens, wrote about criticized the publication of the cartoon and said that the reason the blatant anti-Semitism wasn't recognized by editors is, he attributed this to, quote, the almost torrential criticism of Israel and the mainstreaming of anti-Zionism by his newspaper and by others, which includes treatment of the country that rises to demonization. And, you know, demonization quickly slips into anti-Semitism. So he's absolutely right. So if the newspaper begins to treat Israel as it does other countries, I think at that point it's going to be more likely to treat anti-Semitism, including that anti-Semitism that disguises itself in criticism of Israel, or anti-Semitism that invokes Israel. It'll be more likely to see that the same way it so easily and quickly recognizes other types of dangerous bigotry. So the newspaper has to end its obsession with mistreating Israel.
Hey, Gilad, last question, moving beyond the New York Times. There is a rise of anti-Semitism in this country and obviously in Europe for a while. Why is this? Where's this coming from?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's a difficult question to answer. I think you can look at it in a couple different ways. One, sadly, anti-Semitism is an age-old bigotry that's sort of been used to scapegoat a society's problems by taking it out on the minority, and Jews have always been the minority. That never really went away completely. Of course, after the Holocaust, it became uncouth and unpopular to be openly anti-Semitic, but it feels like maybe enough time has passed since the Holocaust to make people forget the problem. The other issue is we're in a increasingly polarized world where people's passions are encouraged to come out, instead of release their darkest passions, instead of being encouraged to sort of contain them and to think clearly and rationally about problems. And that's, you know, partially a political problem. We get that from leaders across the world on all sides of the spectrum, unfortunately. And so that kind of thinking, that sort of stoking of passions also stokes bigotry. And when bigotry is stoked, anti-Semitism will be the first to return.
Great stuff. Great answer, my friend. Gilad Ini with Camera, a great organization. Support the great work they do for fair and objective reporting in the Middle East and on the Middle East. Camera.org. Gilad, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you so much, Joe.